This is audio made of clips of The Essence of the Notes, the Edu Admeia Contact Notes, prepared by Morris Osborne. This document contains a summary of translated notes that were written by Aobilio Eduard Albert Meyer of Switzerland. These notes not only provide detailed descriptions about his initial 76 contacts with extraterrestrial human beings from within our universe, between the dates of January 28, 1975 and May 23, 1977, but also his contacts with extraterrestrial beings from an entirely different universe ever since the age of 5, in 1942. The contacts are ongoing and do not consist of simple dialogue. They contain real arguments, discussions, humor, agreements, and even outright threats. The only official version of the notes written by Mr. Meyer of these contacts is presented within several volumes, known as Pledgeadis, Pledgeris Contact Spray Tilde Currency Che, and these are only available in the German language from FIGU, Free Interesse in Gemschaft für Grenz, und Geistreswissenschaft und Ufologie Studien, the Free Community of Interests in Fringe and Spiritual Sciences and Ufological Studies. Their website is www.figu.org and their mailing address is FIGU, Samjace Silver Star Center, CH, 8495 Schmidruites ZH, Switzerland. There are some books that have been translated into English, but the correction work progresses very slowly because it is FIGU TMS directive and task to make sure that the translations are as close to the original German transcripts as possible. Fortunately, Lieutenant Colonel Wendell Stevens, USAF, retired, and now left this life a level, published 4 hardbound books of the Meyer Contact Notes into English in 1988 through 1995, titled A Message from the Pleiades. Currently, they are all out of print. But, they are now available on computer CD compact discs at UFO Photo Archives. Mr. Stevens explained the translation process in this way: AO, there are two basic steps to translating written information from one language to another. The first is transliteration, changing the words. The second is interpretation or phrasing of the converted words to most accurately express the original idea in proper form in the new language. The second step is more troublesome. He writes that a Christian, a student of theosophy, and a university scholar all created different translations that conformed to their own personal perspectives. Mr. Stevens further explained in his books, AO, this translation was made by a young German college student who spent a great deal of time at the Meyer home, living with them and observing the various witnesses in their daily lives, and seeking very careful explanations. A, although the translations were not personally reviewed or approved by Eduard Meyer, he did not forbid Wendell from publishing them either. Unfortunately, these translations are difficult to read, contain inaccuracies, and have many omissions. But, they represent the best translations into English that are available to date. Another problem is that the notes represent dialogues involving topics that are presented in no particular order at all, and there is no index provided. It has been 30 years since the notes were first made public, and only a few of the contact notes have ever been translated by FIGU and officially released to the public. It is important to consider that, historically, there have been misinterpretations, revisions, omissions, etc. of important information intended for Earth people that ended up corrupted and turned into religions, which further falsified and distorted the original meaning and intention. The information presented in this document represents a true and accurate summation of the contact notes, as presented in Wendell Stevens' TM first 3 books, without any biases or desires to change the content to any preconceived notions. The only things omitted are inconsequential interactive dialogues between the individuals involved, and the reader is encouraged to review the contact notes in their original sequences for that information. The reader is also encouraged to verify the accuracy of this document and to notify the author of any inaccuracies, which will be confirmed and expediently corrected. The information within the contact notes has been reorganized in this document for easy access to specific topics. However, A table of contents for the original notes is also included in the appendix, which indicates where to find the related information within this document. Each portion of the notes within every subsection is prefaced with a line that indicates the original contact number, reference numbers and heading. Each portion is generally presented in the same order that it appeared in the original notes. However, some portions are presented out of sequence in order to keep all related information together and maintain an easy, to, read format. The extraterrestrial beings that Mr. Mayo has had contact with since 1975 have indicated that they are from an area of space where there is a cluster of seven stars known as the Pleiades within the Taurus constellation. It is 420 light-years from Earth and can be seen with the naked eye on a clear night. However, these extraterrestrial beings are actually from another space and time configuration, 80 light-years beyond the Pleiades, known as the Pleiae system, pronounced Pleia. The central star there is known as Aotageta. It is orbited by 10 planets. 4 are inhabited and one of them is the home world of the human beings that have contacted Mr. Maia, and it is named Aoera. These beings refer to themselves as Plegeron, pronounced Play, R, N, in relation to the Plegeron system where they are from. The reader is likely to find much of this information to be shocking, enlightening, and rather disturbing. Only by reviewing this material with a dispassionate, discerning, and open mind, will the reader obtain the most benefit from this information. Chapter 1. Introduction. Most people believe that Billy Mayer's first contact with an extraterrestrial race occurred on January 28, 1975 in Switzerland. This is not true. Actually, he saw his first UFO at the age of 5 and has had many contacts throughout his whole life. In this chapter, 4 important aspects of Mr. Mayer's life before his contacts with the Plegeron will be presented. First, there will be a summary of Billy's autobiography of between the years of 1937 and 1966. Then, Mayer's acquaintance with a being from another universe is described. This is followed by a description of a trip that was taken into the 13th century. And finally, a conversation is presented between Mayer and Jmanuel, also known as Jesus Christ, at the Dead Sea. All of this information comes from notes that were written by Mayer while he was in Mehrauli, India in 1964. Those notes were inserted within Contact Report 31. Notes. Mayer's biography from 1937 to 1966. Next is, Contact Reports with Askit from 1953 to 1964. Eduard Albert Mayer was born in Switzerland on February 3, 1937. When he was 6 months old, he became ill with a bad case of pneumonia and was not expected to live through the night. While unconscious and close to the point of death, an extraterrestrial being by the name of Sfath, pronounced Sfat, interfered and gave Mayer back his life. When the doctor discovered that Mayer had made a recovery, he declared that there must have been a miracle that was completely unexplainable for him since Mayer should have already been dead. At the age of 5, Mayer observed an extraterrestrial beam ship for the first time. At exactly 9 o'clock in the morning, on the 2nd of June, 1942, Mayer and his father observed a craft as it flew from the east at an incredible speed over the chain of mountains of his home village in Switzerland near the German border, close to the Rhine River. Like a silver flash, it quickly flew towards a church steeple, about 75 meters high, in the center of the village. At the last moment, it exercised a crazy evasive maneuver to the right and shot to about 20 meters below and beside the top of the steeple. Mayer knew nothing of such things and was amazed at the gigantic size of the ship, which appeared to be about 3 or 4 times the height of the church tower. They saw this from their house, which was 2 kilometers from the church. Then, like a flash, it was 200 meters directly over them. It disappeared moments later far behind the Horrigan Forest, 5 kilometers away, all in complete silence. The object was disc-shaped, like 2 plates together, and was nearly 300 meters in diameter. His father told him that it was a new secret weapon from Hitler, but Meyer could not accept this as it seemed too fantastic. The experience left him with a peculiar, small stirring within him that he did not understand. His father thought nothing more about it, as he was involved with his duties on the German frontier for the prior 2 years during World War II. Meyer felt extraordinarily acquainted with the craft and realized that it was from the cosmos. He also felt as though he had seen the craft before, but did not know where. This troubled him greatly, and within 3 months, he began to feel alone and no longer connected to his environment. Alone within himself, he soon became teased and abused for being eccentric, willful, and isolated. He was often beaten, for he lost the desire to defend himself or oppose the false charges against him by others. In his deep thoughts, he became isolated from the world as life became hard, remorseless, silly, primitive and degenerated. He found that within himself, he was greater, more powerful, and gigantic than all the reality of the world. He started to study his fellow human beings and soon discovered that they no longer could keep any secrets from him. He learned that many of them were dishonest, rather silly, and tried to delude and deceive him. But, he kept this knowledge to himself in fear of reprisals. Why he allowed others to lie, steal, and use him is something that eluded him. He knew that every human being needed to go their own way of development, which could not be avoided. Often, old people, who were grieving and tired of life, came to Meyer and poured out their troubles to him. This child of 6 was able to advise and help them. He was invited to attend spiritualistic and religious circles and communities without the knowledge of his parents. But, those who pretended to be inspired or mediums could not hide their deceptions from him, and Meyer took actions to unmask them. This caused him to become even more alone, and he dedicated himself to the secrets of free nature, deep thinking, and spiritual matters. Meyer began scrutinizing the sky and often saw points of light like stars moving over the firmament. For years he pursued the flight trails of these lights in the sky. Sometimes they passed slowly or hurried over like a flash. Often, they would become motionless or oscillate back and forth in the sky. The size of these objects were varied, from only a few meters, to hundreds of meters, and their shapes were like disks, spirals, orbs, and huge spheres. He often had the feeling that he was acquainted with these objects. After 2 seemingly endless years, Meyer was shocked to hear a silent voice within him on his birthday of February 3rd, that ordered him to thoroughly learn knowledge that would be transmitted to him. He feared that he had suddenly become delusional and did not trust the voice that always tried to calm him. He decided to confide in a preacher who listened to his whole story. This soft and wise man smiled and said that Meyer had no need to fear, because he was the best person informed about such things. He agreed to educate Meyer in certain things on the condition that he kept silent about it, because it would not be agreeable with his profession. It was the mission of the priest to slowly initiate humanity regarding the truth about religion. Priest Zimmerman explained that the voice within Meyer had nothing to do with madness or delusion, but was telepathy from another human being far away in the universe, and that this means of communication was over unlimited distances and knew no obstacles. He also revealed that Meyer would only be receptive to the high frequencies of higher developed forms of life, and that beings of lower levels would not be able to penetrate into him, because he was being protected from underdeveloped entities for a special mission. The priest also told Meyer that his life would become extraordinarily hard, full of deprivation and needs. Meyer overcame his fear and devoted himself to not only receiving transmissions, but to asking questions and receiving answers. So, in the year 1944, Meyer took up telepathic contacts with an entity, who called himself Svith, and became initiated into huge matters that often seemed to him to be delusional. Svith informed him that he was being prepared for a very important mission, and that he would have to decide for himself whether to take on the burden of the mission, or not. It was explained that, before his birth, Meyer had been elected for this mission. Svith also explained many other things, such as the fact that the Earth had come into a new age, and that the day of Meyer's birth was the passage into the middle point in time of the new age. It was the passage from the age of Pisces into the age of Aquarius. This occurred at exactly 11:20 a.m. on February 3, 1937 and had a most important meaning. It was the exact moment when Maya began to have self-supporting consciousness and the moment when he started to prepare himself for his mission. On a summer's day in 1944, Maya was strolling alone in his thoughts when suddenly he heard Svith say that he should wait for some minutes and not be frightened. A few minutes later, a peculiar appearing silver metallic object quickly came down from the sky. It was a bear-shaped object, no more than 5 or 6 meters in diameter, that landed and a very old man walked out wearing a silvery deep sea diver's type of suit without a helmet. He approached Maya and spoke in his native dialect. He stated that his name was Svith and that Maya should come with him. Maya followed Svith into his craft. Inside, Maya noticed 3 peculiar-looking chairs and desks. The walls were full of apparatuses and instruments with little windows having strange figures and the landscape outside. Svith told Maya to sit down while he handled some controls that caused the craft to ascend. He explained that the windows were actually viewing screens. The craft rapidly ascended above the Earth to a height of 70 kilometers. They remained there for a few hours as Svith told Maya some important information and taught him very important things. He stated that Maya's spiritual development had already surpassed earthly standards and that no one else on Earth would be able to answer his questions. Maya was not afraid. Everything appeared to be familiar and self-evident to him. He was calm and not astonished when Svith explained that in the early 1950s, he would be passing down his obligation with Maya to a very much higher developed form of life because he would be near the end of his life and that Maya would be equal to his own knowledge. Svith told Maya that he would need to be much further developed for his mission and so would be taken under the care of a much higher intelligence. Maya was also told that mankind on Earth would be walking into a very dangerous time and that the Second World War would end in the following year of 1945. He was also told that on August 6, 1945, the events of Sodom and Gomorrah would be repeated to end the war. Svith also told Maya many other things about which he was ordered to keep silent. At the end of this meeting, Maya lay back in the chair and a strange contraption was laid on his head. Suddenly, vast knowledge and perceptions entered his head. Strange powers penetrated into him and he was able to realize matters of the future, wanted to cure human beings from suffering, and many other things. Then the influences ended and Svith removed the strange apparatus. Maya was told that he would never lose his new abilities, but that he was never allowed to use them egotistically, for profit, for demonstrations, or scientific evaluations. He could only use these abilities to further his own development and help others unselfishly and without profit. If at any time these rules were not followed, then all abilities and knowledge would be blocked by an implant until the danger passed. The same thing would happen if outside influences would attempt to penetrate his knowledge or abilities. Then, Svith brought Maya back to the Earth exactly where he had started 4 hours previously and disappeared again with his bear-shaped ship. As a consequence of this, Maya became more isolated from his environment and he endured even greater wicked intrigues. He became the scapegoat for all evil that happened in his village. He would simply smile silently to himself and paid a hard price with thrashings. He became known as a problem child and was placed in several institutions. But, he was never wanted wherever he went. He escaped under life-threatening circumstances and crossed forests for weeks, living on wild berries, fruits, grasses and roots. His bed was the ground and his roof was the firmament. He became incorrigible, querulous, and antisocial. He was accused of every evil act that occurred and the police automatically seized him. Maya kept silent and did not defend himself against the false accusations. The consequence of this was that he was committed to a psychiatric hospital for evaluation because he told the police about certain facts regarding beings from other stars. Maya fabricated a key from a piece of wood that opened a second-story restroom window. He went through the window and jumped 8 meters down, outside the wall. He severely injured his right foot and the pain was very intense. But, he climbed over a 2-meter-high enclosure and disappeared into a wide field. He evaded a search party and dogs by running through a forest, falling down a slope, and swimming several kilometers down the Rhine River in November. After climbing painfully to shore, he limped for days through fields and forests towards the French border, eating only scarce plants. In France, he joined the French Foreign Legion and received medical help for his foot. He was sent to Algeria where he learned discipline until he became tired of it and escaped after enduring many hellish situations. Meyer returned to Europe and presented himself to the police where they returned him to the same mental hospital. He was befriended by the chief psychiatrist who certified him as above average normal. Meyer was then transferred to a house of correction. He found himself unable to clear up the false charges against him in a court of law. The result was that he remained in prisons and asylums for 4.5 years. While there, he learned of spiritual concerns and discovered that he would have to become modest and unselfish to be a real human being. After his release, he joyfully disappeared abroad for 12 years. He came to realize that all of the hardships in his life have been learning experiences that he was able to take advantage of and that they only represented a small part of his life. On February 3, 1953, Meyer heard Svith's voice once more and transmitted to him many matters and a huge amount of knowledge before saying goodbye. His voice sounded very old and tired. Then, his voice became silent forever. Only a few hours after Svith's voice became silent, a new voice came into Meyer's head. This new voice was young, fresh, and full of force, quite unlike Svith, namely very smooth and harmonic. This new voice explained that she was a woman called Askit, pronounced Askit, and that she would now be his new companion. Meyer was finally able to meet Askit in person on February 3, 1956. She showed him inside of the Great Pyramid of Gizeh and they spent 2 days together while she explained many things to him. Then, 2 days later, they met again for 7 days of time travels. In the following years, Meyer learned many things and obtained phenomenal perceptions. With Askit's help, Meyer was led out far into the world for many years to explore and find out many things. Meyer was especially taught about spiritual matters which were completely different from his prior religious teachings. Over the years, Meyer attended special schools secretly to become a priest. Askit ordered Meyer to dedicate himself to the Christian and other religions in order to explore them for the sake of study. So, he became a Protestant, Catholic, Buddhist, Hindu, Jew, Muslim and others. This demanded many years of study and in June of 1969, it finally ended. During the 12 years of travels, Meyer undertook more than 320 different professions. In the course of his duties as a private detective and guard, Meyer lost his left arm in a car accident on the 3rd of August, 1965 in Iskenderun, Turkey. On December 25, 1965, Meyer met his wife, Tuğ Bi, and asked her to marry him on January 25, 1966. But, this was not acceptable to her parents. So they eloped on February 25, 1966 after many difficulties. Next is, 1.2 Meyer's acquaintance with Askit and travel to Egypt. Askit's acquaintance, inside the Gizeh Pyramid. At about 2 o'clock in the morning of February 3, 1956 in Switzerland, Meyer was ordered by Askit's voice to come to a certain place where he would be taken. Meyer was anxious to finally be able to meet Askit and quickly went to the designated place. Suddenly, without a sound, a clear lighted disc shot down and touched the ground near him. Following a soft coercion, Meyer went towards it and suddenly became carried into an opening. A door closed behind him. There was only one chair inside with no one else around. As soon as Meyer sat down, the shining light from everywhere inside turned off and the ship appeared to sit in free space. Meyer and the ship appeared to become invisible as the craft lifted and hovered over his parents' house. Then, Ask its voice was heard to explain about Meir's future way of life, of his family below him, and of his own family in the future. Then suddenly, the craft shot rapidly into the night sky without Meir feeling any differences. Within minutes the ship was in outer space. Suddenly, Meir and the ship became visible again in bright lights and a door opened. This ship had landed, and when Meir went outside, he saw that the earth was red and sandy with massive mountains nearby. Suddenly, a huge ball of light fell rapidly from the sky. Then it stood motionless at about 80 meters in the air before slowly descending to the ground. A half hour later, a figure came from behind the ship and walked close to Meir as the shining of the ship dimmed and then turned off. The figure was a woman that emitted a loving sympathy. She incited the appearance of an angel as she wore a long dress of silver, white color that was cinched at the waist. Over the shoulders, fell her long blonde hair, and her face was very beautiful. Sensing Meir's feelings, Askit said that he should remember his other lifetimes before the present. After the welcome, Meir was invited by Askit to step into her ship. Once inside, the ship hurtled into the sky and became invisible as with the other ship. Meir could see the Mediterranean Sea in the early morning light. When the craft landed beyond the sea, Meir could see the Sphinx and pyramids of Giza in Egypt. There was a small Bedouin camp nearby with several Arabian-clothed people that took no notice of the landing ship because it was invisible. Askit placed an instrument on Meir's belt that enabled them to see each other and the craft, but were invisible to everyone else. To test this, Meir first kissed one and then all of the women in the camp, which surprised all of them and delighted Meir. Askit then led Meir by the hand into the Great Pyramid. They walked through long, dimly lit passages until they reached a huge square stone that suddenly dissolved itself into nothing. They walked through the space that had previously been stone and then it reappeared. They silently crept past guards who took no notice of them. They descended very deep down steep stairs and then went through a passageway into the pyramid until they came to a huge, brightly lit hall. They could see a large, disc-shaped spaceship resting in the hall that was about 300 meters in diameter. This was at least 300 to 400 meters within and under the Great Pyramid of Giza. Askit then led Meir upwards to a small plateau to see a very old and heavy wooden cross. Beside this, laid three blood-stained and hand-crafted, rusty nails. There was also a blood-stained wreath with abnormally great thorns, a purple-colored coat, and a little leather bag from which precious stones had rolled out. Meir believed these items to be the genuine crucifixion items of Jesus Christ and began to be religiously influenced. He wondered why Sfuth had said that the Christian religion was an unscrupulous and wicked piece of work for stupefying and enslaving as all the other earthly religions. He also said that Shmanuel should never have been called Jesus Christ, considered to be God's son, and that God was not the creation. Askit seized Meir by the arm and led him back out of the pyramid as they had come. When they returned to their craft, it rapidly flew towards the sky. At an incredible speed, the ship returned to the same place from which they had departed for the pyramid. For two full days they remained there while Askit taught Meir very many things. Next is Askit's explanation on February 3, 1953. As Meir listened, Askit explained that, in order to perform their mission, they had to neutralize the space and time structure of our universe for harmonic passage without hurting their ships and the universe. Askit's home world was in a similar system called Akan in an entirely different universe known as the Dull Universe. It is one among others that enclose this universe. Many lay in other time planes and different spaces. The Dull Universe is a parallel universe to this one and in the same time plane. The reason for Askit to come into our universe is in a spirit of research for the human race because of earlier centuries. Due to their technology, a universal barrier was opened and they explored the widths of this universe. 3,300 years ago, they discovered Earth in the Sun's solar system. In their research, they also discovered the original home world and history of the human race because humanity did not originate on Earth. Human beings are the descendants of a race from the Ringed Nebula.